The Stein Online Clubland Q&A begins right now.
Hey, welcome along. We are live around the planet, and this is Mark Stein with you for another of our Clubland Q&As. You know how this works. You don't have to be a member of our club to listen. Anyone of the 7 billion persons around this planet can listen to the show, but you do have to be a Mark Stein Club member to ask a question, and we do look forward to your questions. We are live at 11 a.m. North American Eastern Time. Some people hate the recitation of the time zones. Other people love it. They find it a reassuring constant in a turbulent world. But it's 11 a.m. North American Eastern. That is midnight, not midnight, midday in the Canadian Maritimes. I know it seems like a big difference, but it's not that big a difference. Anyway, beyond the Americas, it's 5 p.m. Paris and Berlin, 6 p.m. Istanbul and Jerusalem, 7 p.m. in the Trucial States, as I shall always think of them. And that means it is 7:30 p.m. in Kabul, where the Taliban have been holding victory. They all look very snazzy now in their American uniforms, driving around in their American vehicles. I see Snopes, the joke increasingly ludicrous fact checkers, have said, it's not true we've left them all this stuff. They've looked into it. They've looked into it from wherever they are, Malibu, or wherever they monitor Kabul from, and they've decided that this is false, this idea that the Taliban is now one of the most luxuriously kitted militaries on the planet. The Taliban feel differently, and they're showing off their snazzy new American threads and driving around in their Humvees. They've got almost 10% of all the Humvees on the planet. So thank you. Thank you, Thoroughly Modern Millie. We have your questions. If you want to join right now, you can join right now, and we'll shuffle your question up to the front of the queue. But you don't have to join. We seek no unwilling members. Michael from Colorado says, so, Mark, we have yet another example of the Democrats hold power while Republicans hold office. This is an old saying of mine. When Democrats win, they're in power. When Republicans win, they're in office. Think of Lindsey Graham. Mitch McConnell says Biden won't be impeached, but let's hold him accountable at the ballot box. Tell you what, Mitch, I've got a better plan. Why don't you just go to the Bahamas and work on your tan for the next 14 months? So the plan here is that Biden will pay no consequences, because you figure that in 14 months' time, the way you can keep this going, because that's the American way, that they'll want to punish him for this at the box office. Meanwhile, says Mitch, send money now to sendmoneynow.com. Lindsey Graham, oh, yes, no, yes, Lindsey might be in a tight race in South Carolina in 5 years' time. So send money now to sendmoneynow.com. Actually, I tell you what, instead of sending my money to sendmoneynow.com, why don't you just take the portion of the Taliban's new military that I paid for and Mrs. Gladys Scroggins of 23B Elm Street paid for, and you take that and you give that. Because I've already paid. I paid at the office. I gave at the office. I gave the Taliban a new army. Yeah, just before we get into any more questions, I'll finish off Michael's question. I just want to make a statement here up front. Two things. First, at about 9 p.m. British Summer Time, which is 4 p.m. North American Eastern, you can catch the rerun of Stein's Song of the Week on Serenade Radio. And that's a terrific show. And this Sunday's episode, of which this is a repeat, is a particularly excellent episode. So you will in that's not me saying that. That's the listener. So you'll get a kick out of that. And then the second thing is, aside from being on Serenade Radio in the United Kingdom, I was on India Up Front. On Indian TV, which I think is the highest rated show on English language show on Indian TV, and indeed won the best primetime show award, and it deserved it because it was where the conversation used to be, which is that this is such a total failure that it has made America a global laughingstock. And I know that's tough for our American listeners. It is actually, it's one thing to be loved, it's one thing to be hated, it's another thing to be a total laughingstock. And neither nowhere on American so-called conservative radio or so-called conservative TV is the conversation anywhere near where it needs to be. And on India Up Front, I had the pleasure of being on that show with a fine host, three Indian experts, including a general with the most fantastic handlebar mustaches I've seen since Jimmy Edwards, and an American from the Rand Corporation who insisted that America, that no matter what I said, America hadn't lost any wars since 1945 because, as he defined war, it hadn't fought any wars since 1945. Just to be clear here, you know, conservatives are supposed to be the manly party and Democrats are supposed to be the feminized party. I don't quite get that because the feminized party are kicking the masculine party's butts all over American society. But you ought to be man enough, man enough. And I don't hear this. I've listened, I gave a cursory listen to some of these shows that purport to be replacements for the Rush Limbaugh show. And I can tell you Rush wouldn't have ducked it, wouldn't have dodged it. And I understand the preference that, oh, yes, no, I can't, no, I can't hear you. Don't want to handle the fact that I've just been humiliated by goat herds and the goat herds are now running around in all the Humvees. And the goat herds have funnier writers than Trevor Noah and Jimmy Fallon and Jimmy Kimmel and Jimmy Colbert and all the other unfunny Jimmies of the world's lamest comedy circuit doing all these excellent gags on TV, like having a funeral parade for the United States, France, the United Kingdom and all the other NATO countries. That's a lot of coffins and a lot of flags, and they got them all. So they're funnier than us. Mordant, dark, black comedy, appropriate to the moment. The whiz entirely beyond the formulaic crapola of Jimmy Fallon, Killen, Jimmy Colbert, whatever the guys' names are, and their 147-man writing team. Pathetic. Pathetic people. Can't even joke. Can't even joke as you slide off the cliff. So the conversation, the Indian conversation, was where it ought to be, because this is basically Britain's 1842 retreat from Kabul, the fall of Singapore, Suez, and the retreat from east of Suez all rolled into one. And Americans, wait a minute, you know, because it's business as usual. I'll tell you one story. I'm wandering a little here, and I want to get back to your questions. But this, I think, is telling to me. The United States, now that the United States has destroyed the government it's been propping up for 20 years and is in league with the Taliban, right? So we're now going to give money direct to the Taliban, according to the State Department. But aside from that, Afghanistan's neighbors are worried that all the crazies will be coming their way. So we're also going to be building. This was announced by the US Embassy in Tajikistan. We're going to be building new border facilities for the Tajiks along the Tajikistan-Afghanistan border. That's Tajikistan's southern border. So just to be clear here, because people say, well, to be honest, foreigners in general bore me, so I'd just rather talk about domestic issues. Well, your biggest domestic issue right now is the fact that America has no southern border. At the same time as America has no southern border, America is building a southern border for Tajikistan. It's building border facilities for the Tajiks, reinforced border facilities, state-of-the-art border facilities, the kind you'll never see on the Rio Grande, where people are just, you know, taking the old skiff across and walking in. You won't see that on America's southern border, but America is building it on Tajikistan's southern border. And I'm supposed to take Mitch McConnell seriously. I don't know. Anyway, where was I? Oh, I was halfway through our first question. I got carried away. It was Michael from Colorado. Yeah, Mitch says Biden won't be impeached, but instead let's hold him accountable at the ballot box. And how do we do that, boys and girls? We do that by getting out our checkbooks and writing a check and then sending money now to sendmoneynow.com. Yes, says Mitch, by all means, let's get the incompetence and hatefulness of Biden and his administration off the front page. Put January the 6th or the Jim Crow election show laws and whatever else the Democrats want to talk about back on the front page. What crime will it take for the Republicans to go for the jugular? They don't know where the jugular is. They were too busy doing gender studies, so they never learned about anatomy. I don't know where the jugular is. Democrats do it over a phone call. Hope for all we hold dear continues to fade away. That's true. I can't argue with that. But this is beyond, you know, this is beyond Mitch, and it's beyond, you know, these are pitiful people who are put up at the podium to represent the United States to the world. You say what you like about the Taliban. But, you know, if you listen to some of these, the Taliban have got far more sophisticated. I made this point, actually, on the Indian show, because it sort of struck me as a random thought a couple of minutes into whatever I was saying. Mullah Omar, who was the face of the Taliban through all the years that they were in power, except he wasn't a face. There's only one known photograph of him that existed in his lifetime. He didn't have press conferences. He didn't do the sort of things that these... He didn't do the social media stuff where he's just trolling the losers by putting Taliban guys in US uniform and holding up the Taliban flag like the Yanks at Iwo Jima. Mullah Omar didn't do any of that. He didn't have public relations guys. He didn't have a marketing department. He didn't have a Jimmy Fallon, Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Colbert-sized gag writers department. So the Taliban have actually learnt a lot from being holed up in Gitmo and then in Qatar for 20 years. And they're a savvier kind of Taliban. And by comparison, these duds you see, like Milley, you know, what did I say about him the other day? All ribbons and no chest. But it's beyond just, you know, Biden being useless, Blinken being useless. There's something bigger here. Parties don't lose wars. Most people around the planet don't even know who the parties are in America. Nations lose wars. It's on America. The humiliation is on America. And that's why the conversation... I mean, I can hardly be able to switch on an American telly or listen to an American radio show. They're so behind where the conversation needs to be. Brian from Minneapolis says, "Dear Mark, with all that has happened regarding Afghanistan, the GOP hasn't even bothered to move an inch regarding impeachment. Is this the good-for-nothing GOP playing the usual will use Afghanistan as a talking point for the midterm?" Not a talking point. They don't talk about anything, really, do they, these guys? But send money now to sendmoneynow.com. A talking point for the midterms, or are we actually going to be serious for once? Wishful thinking on my part for the latter. Your thoughts, Mark. Well, as I said yesterday, my concern is this, that if, and that's why Sean Hannity, you know, Sean is, I think he's now the number one radio host in America. He's huge, hugely influential there. He's got I don't think he's got as big an audience as Rush had, but Rush isn't here anymore. So Sean's the number two and he's now number one. And he's it's a phenomenally successful show. It's everywhere you go between 3 and 6 Eastern, midday and 3 Pacific. Sean's on hundreds and hundreds of radio stations. And then he has what's usually, I think, the number two or number three cable show every evening. And his big buddy on the radio and on the telly is Lindsey Graham. And Lindsey Graham is, these guys, if it's a choice between Biden is saying, look, I ended the forever war. We're not in Afghanistan anymore. You don't have to think about goat herds with fertilizer. You don't have to remember which smelly guy with an unkempt beard is our guy and which smelly guy with an unkempt beard is the other guy's guy. You don't have to bother about it. You don't have to think about foreigners. We're coming home. We're going to do nation building at home. And we're starting by bringing in every Afghan except the 200 translators who worked for us. Those we're leaving behind in Afghanistan. Every other strapping young Afghan male, we're moving to Virginia or to Texas or wherever. And as ludicrous as the Biden rationale, the Blinken rationale, oh, we're going to stay fully engaged with the Taliban to make sure they have enough lesbian cabinet ministers. As ludicrous as that is, when the alternative is Lindsey Graham, boots, 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 marching up and down again, boots, 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 on every country on the planet. Oh, what's happened in the South Sandwich Islands? We need boots on the ground! If the alternative is Lindsey Graham, it's not even going to work at the box office. Did I say box office? Ballot box. I don't care. It's lousy box office anyway. Robert Morell writes, hi, Mark. You often quote Mrs. Thatcher. First you win the argument, then you win the vote. Yet when asked whether impeachment of President Biden, this actually, I never pay any attention to what Mitch McConnell says about anything. He's a whip, really. I mean, that's what he would be in a parliamentary system. He's a whip. And the whips are sometimes interesting to talk to if it's a close vote or it's a no-confidence vote. Or it's a vote on whether you should go to war or whatever. Whips can be interesting to talk to for that reason. And that reason alone. But he's not otherwise interesting. Aside from the parliamentary arithmetic, what interesting stuff does he ever say? What interesting stuff does Mitch McConnell ever say? Nothing. But he's annoyed a lot of our listeners, it appears, and that may be something that we'll be addressing throughout this show. But Robert Morell says, or Morrell, I hope I got it right one way or the other, says Mitch McConnell is making the exact opposite argument to Mrs. Thatcher when he says that Republicans must win the House and the Senate before they can contemplate impeachment. It's right now, 52% of the American public, according to a poll, and if you figure how rigged the polls are against Republicans and conservatives, you can imagine what the real number is. But the poll says that 52% of people would like Biden to resign. In a parliamentary system, it would be a resignation issue. You know, on our 100 Years Ago show, we've been covering the Spanish army's defeat at the hands of Rif warriors. So the Spaniards are basically the Americans, and the Rif warriors of Morocco are the equivalent of the Taliban. So that's the reason we do the 100 Years Ago show, because of the echoes of history, because pretty much everything that's happened has happened before. Except in this case, I find it hard to find appropriate historical precedents for celebrating LGBT QWERTY Month at the U.S. Embassy all through June, and then the entire state collapsing the following month. And I don't want to do all the cheap pride comes before a fall gag because it isn't really funny, actually. It's tragic to be exiting the stage of history in such a contemptible and pathetic way. Robert Morell says, it's infuriating. Mitch McConnell's making the exact opposite argument of Mrs. Thatcher's. First you win the argument, then you win the election. That's Mrs. Thatcher's thing. That's what she did in 1979. Otherwise, no one would have heard of her. She said, Mitch McConnell says the opposite, that Republicans must win the House and the Senate before they can contemplate impeachment. It's infuriating how our Republican leadership does not even try to persuade in what is supposed to be the world's greatest deliberative body. Yeah, have you ever heard any? When have you actually heard the United States Senate deliberate anything? They don't do debates. Most of them are incapable of debates. When I testified, I had that boob from Massachusetts. What's he called? Markey, the boob from Massachusetts. He used to have an ice cream van, I gather, before he went into politics. So he could actually make an ice cream for Joe Biden, and then the press could cover it. I mean, am I talking about the world's greatest photo op here? You know, you would have Senator Markey making one of those mix cones, you know, the vanilla and the chocolate, and putting some jimmies on, rainbow sprinkles, whatever you call them, and maybe a bit of butterscotch. And he can make that, and he could actually hand that to Joe, and then the press wouldn't have to talk about Afghanistan, because they could say to Joe, oh, look, do you like it with the butterscotch topping, or would you rather have had the caramel topping? And that would have taken care of the news cycle for the next 24 hours, so there wouldn't be any problem with Afghanistan, because nobody out there would ever have heard a word about it. And Robert says it's infuriating how our Republican leadership, I'm cranky today, because I think this is pathetic. And I think I lump in much of the conservative media, which, aside from expressing sympathy for the thankless task of joining the US military and having to dither around Afghanistan for 20 years under commanders who are among the worst on the planet and the most lavishly remunerated and certainly the most over-garlanded, with ribbons from shoulder to scrotum. It is pathetic. And it's preventing me from reading out these letters properly, because I get so annoyed about certain things. Anyway, Robert continues. The Republicans simultaneously assume that the other side cannot be persuaded and concede that our side do not have persuasive arguments to make. These are assumptions that are corrosive to a free society. As I said, you know, in a parliamentary system, Mitch McConnell would be the chief whip. That's all he is. He runs the numbers. Do we have the votes to get Amy Coney Barrett, across the finish line, or do we have to find someone more conciliatory to Susan Collins? That's what he is, a chief whip. I wouldn't look to him for an argument about anything. Robert rightly says, surely there is something to be gained by forcing the debate and the vote, even if it is destined to lose. And I don't believe it is destined, by the way. Surely making the other person stand up and defend their position is part of the process of winning the argument. How did we end up in the ridiculous position of having to persuade our leaders to try to persuade our opponents? And how do we get new leadership short of starting a new party? Well, for a start, you shouldn't send money now to sendmoneynow.com. They've got all the money they need. But you're absolutely right that it's about getting it on the record. This is a crisis. Now, I don't have much time for the other Anglosphere democracies these days, because they're also in a pitiful state in some ways, because they've gone far too far with all the American wokeness. But the Palace of Westminster did actually vote for the first time, both the House of Lords and the House of Commons, to hold a President of the United States in contempt. Never happened before in the entire history of the American Republic. They loathed Trump, but they never voted to hold him in contempt. And the language used about, and this is important, because the first thing that, I'll tell you how we go about the 100 Years Ago show. Something happens 100 years ago, and we look to find out what the politicians said about it. And so here we have a staggering American defeat that, as I said, is the retreat from Kabul and the fall of Singapore and Suez and the retreat from east of Suez all rolled into one. It's a total humiliation. China is enjoying it immensely. And China knows well that everybody else, in the whether you're talking about Taiwan, whether you're talking about Pakistan, whether you're talking about Australia, everyone else is thinking, oh, yeah, the Americans are so over, aren't they? And there ought to be. And yet when you look up what the politicians have said about it, you'll find Mitch McConnell, the leader of the Republican Party, in the United States Congress saying, yeah, we don't really want to talk about it. We think this might come up at the midterm elections in 14 months' time. Robert's absolutely right. This isn't an effective mechanism. The whole system. But whatever it started out at, which is why I'm going to now go into one of my don't wave your constitution at me routines. By the way, did you hear Mark Levin the other night? Mark Levin said that Americans had more liberties under the British Crown. You know, I've had my difficulties with Mark Levin, differences with him. He sued me, I forget how many times now, unsuccessfully. He testified against me, called me a putz at trial. He lost, so who's the putz? But I'll say this for Mark Levin, when he's right, he's right. Boy, Americans had more liberties. I used to do this routine 2008, I think I first started doing it, that if George III was running, he'd be the small government candidate. And yeah, we've all gone, there's no George III, there's no George III in Ottawa, there's no George III in London, there's no George III in Canberra, so... But something is going on here that if it's permitted by this constitution, where the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, something to do with stopping malaria, and now it's stopping landlords collecting rent. I mean, something is going badly wrong with it, and I don't want to pick on Mark Levin and mock him for saying that. Mark Levin's got his other problems at the moment. His big best-selling book, he's apparently confused the Frankfurt School. I haven't read his book, but I'm just reading news reports. Throughout the book, he, instead of saying the Frankfurt School, he says the Franklin School. I don't even know what that is. Is that Franklin Elementary School in Franklin, New Hampshire? With the headmistress, Bonnie Franklin. I don't know. But he's apparently been saying this on TV and radio and throughout the book, that he's talking about the Franklin School instead of the Frankfurt School. And he said the Franklin School, which came out of Berlin. whereas, of course, the Frankfurt School came out of Frankfurt. The clue is in the name. And Franklin isn't a very German-sounding name. So I'm wandering off topic a bit here. But he's not wrong. When he's right, he's right. And the fact of the matter is that whatever the founders devised, we now have a wholly perverted system in which there is very little. There is never any discussion of the issues. The issue here is America's global role. And America doesn't, a lot of Americans don't want a global role. They don't want to be the world's policeman. I republished a piece of mine from a decade ago. Yes, they just have no interest in it. They don't have an imperialist bone in their body. And Eric Dale, one of our listeners, Eric Dale said, you know, I was wrong to argue for imperialism. One of the reasons I am an imperialist, I always say I'm a 19th century imperialist, 100 years past my sell-by date, because the Pax Britannica was one of the great things, the best time for the planet, and certainly for Western civilization, was between 1848 and 1914. There's no argument about it. And the Americans were the beneficiary of that. If you like your Jacksonian Republic that's not mixed up in foreign entanglements of any kind, well, that's because you had an ocean on one side and an ocean on the other side, and the ships of the Royal Navy were patrolling those oceans. They were doing that job. Once they're gone, somebody else has to do the job. And so it fell to the Americans, who just, you know, they don't want to do it. So they set up all these international institutions after the Second World War. And the WHO is a very good example of what happened to those institutions. You, Mrs. Gladys Scroggins of 23B Elm Street, you pay for the WHO, but they don't care about you, Mrs. Gladys Scroggins of 23B Elm Street. They only care what Chairman Xi thinks. All those transnational institutions that were set up in lieu of imperialism, in fact, have wound up in the hands of America's enemies. That's the problem. I'm sorry, I've gotten rather heated and I've been interrupting questions. I'll try and calm down a bit. Raj writes, "Hello, Mark. I'm back in the club after a rather long hiatus of 2 years." You are... Raj is the Taliban of the Mark Stein Club. He was out 2 years ago, but now he's back riding around the club in a new Humvee. It is great to have you back, Raj. My question, the decision to withdraw from Afghanistan was floated by the Trump administration. What would the previous administration have done differently, apart from making it look like Dunkirk 1940 rather than Saigon 1975, or was it Hanoi 1974? Please share your hypothesis. Well, I certainly think, Raj, that the Trump administration would have planned for something better. That, as you said, I don't even think it would have looked more like Dunkirk 1940. I think it would probably have been more like Aden 1967 or 1968. I'm trying to remember the year now, where basically the Union Jack came down and the next day the flag of the People's Socialist Republic of South Yemen was run up. It was a bad British defeat, and it was in a port that had been British since whatever it was, the early 19th century. But it was an orderly withdrawal and an orderly evacuation. What we all assume from that is that there was no way that the Afghan government was ever going to make it. And I think there is a lot of truth in that. I'm not, you know, I will add one qualification to that, that if you say, oh, they would have made it look like Dunkirk 1940 rather than Saigon 1975. I think whatever they planned, Milley and the gang would have disrupted it. Don't forget that for basically the last half of the Trump administration, he had been the commander in chief, so called, had been giving orders that were not followed. You know, oh, pull our troops out of Syria. Oh, yes, certainly, sir, no problem. Leave it to us. We'll get right on that. And then they don't do anything. They just sort of go on the down low, and it's all a bit sotto voce. But basically, they don't follow his orders. Milley, in particular, all ribbons and no chest, was actively subverting his so-called commander in chief for basically his entire term. So I think whatever Trump had wished to happen. And don't forget, from their point of view, and this, I think, is one of the reasons why America has no foreign policy, no effective foreign policy, no effective military projection, is because it only ever looks at foreign countries in terms of domestic politics. So here you have a guy who's chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He's sitting there at the Pentagon. The Pentagon is supposed to be running these pseudo-colonial policing operations all over the planet. And instead, the Joint Chiefs of Staff are basically preoccupied on how they're going to screw over Trump. They're thinking like Latin American generals. They're thinking about how we can screw over the guy in the presidential palace so one of us can get in there. That's how they're thinking, and that's what they would have done to him. So actually, that in itself is one of the real problems here, that we have so many institutions have been corrupted And in a sense, throughout Trump's entire term, he was head of the executive branch, but he had no control over the executive branch. The branch was in revolt, open revolt, basically. Milley's leaking about how he's leaking to friendly journalists about how he's going to go in there and drag Trump out of the Oval Office, and how he's furious at being suckered at going along with Trump's thing at that church that got burned down and all the rest of it. So we have them in more or less open revolt. I don't even know why he's still there. I don't know why Trump hired him. I don't know, you know. But basically, if you had generals behaving like this, like that guy I was on Indian TV with, General Bakshi, if you had Indian generals behaving like this, I can assure you they'd be slapped down pretty bloody quickly, because they'd be reminded, their behavior would remind the Indians too much of Pakistani generals. I'm being pretty bipartisan here. The thing is, everyone's agreed there's no way. Democrats, Republicans, no one can figure out a way. So the trick is to design a way in which we lose to the Taliban as harmlessly to America's reputation as possible. Instead, we've done the complete opposite, where we're flying in hundreds of thousands of strapping young Afghan men with no papers. And meanwhile, back in Afghanistan, we're either abandoning those who wasted 2 years of their lives applying through the crappy Department of State bureaucracy for their special immigrant visas. Nobody with the special immigrant visa got through. And some of them, like those six kids the other day, Sunday evening, we droned. Just to remind you of how totally an incompetent superpower can screw you over. Christopher Gelber writes, I apologize for the crankiness. I'm just, you know, let me see if I can put it in a nutshell. This will be the fall of Kabul will be the date they look back on to say why, when the America's post 1950 moment ended, it had survived a lot of bumpy things like Vietnam, but it had survived them, and it had been up against an enemy that managed to defeat itself, as in large part America has managed to defeat itself. But in the Cold War, the Soviet Union, if the Soviet Union hadn't more or less imploded, I don't even like to think how that would have gone had it been a real war. Eric Dale. Wait a minute. Oh, Christopher Gelber. Yeah, I'm getting a little... I'd started on that and then I moved on. Christopher Gelber says, Mark, we are watching in real time as the White House and its media enablers simultaneously spin the unbelievable criminal ineptitude of the Afghan withdrawal. Don't say Afghani, Christopher. No one in Afghanistan says Afghani. No one in Pakistan says Afghani. No one in India says Afghani. It's just one of those rubbish words. It's like Kabul. Ineptitude of the Afghan withdrawal is a net positive and work to memory hole it by pivoting to other issues. My prediction is that they will succeed, and only we regressive reactionaries will be hollering into the wind about all this a month from now. What do you think? Because if I'm right and they get away with this, it becomes hard to see if there are any limits left at all. Yeah, basically the left has this kind of invincible ignorance where they actually... which depends on them not looking anything up. But in this case, they actually believe the line that they've been peddled, which is that Biden's the one that finally got us out of Afghanistan. And not only that, but he's evacuated more people in a shorter time than anyone has ever done. He wasn't expecting to have to do this airlift, but he's done an incredible job. You can just see now, go to Presque Isle, Maine, and walk down Main Street, and there's going to be 30,000 strapping young Afghan lads there in a couple of weeks' time. And they believe that narrative, and the whole point of it then is we go, if you notice, he stumbled for a bit because he was always coming on to talk about, you know, something else first, and then he'd get to Afghanistan. But yeah, I think the politics of this, he's made a calculation and he thinks it's going to work for him. Eric Dale writes, Mark, what are your thoughts on Joe Biden's diplomacy with our allies? Donald Trump and George W. Bush were smeared by the establishment media as actively damaging our alliances for pursuing policies many of our allies disagreed with or publicly airing our differences with them. Joe Biden, on the other hand, unilaterally began our withdrawal with no notice or consultation with our allies. He refused to take Boris Johnson's call for 36 hours. His actions left American and NATO citizens at the mercy of the Taliban. The American media seems to be giving Joe Biden a pass on this. What is the impression overseas? Well, I haven't heard nothing ever. Because I don't, you know, it was a NATO operation. With, I think, 36 countries there. There's some people, I don't even know what they were doing there. It was like a Mongolian detachment. So there's all these plucky Mongols and Slovenes and Germans and Italians and all these other people there. And they just wake up one morning and America has flown the coop. And that's the first they heard about it. And they don't know. Now, they're under this guy, Austin somebody. Is he called Austin somebody? No, Austin's the lousy defense secretary with the Darth Vader visor thing that makes him look even more of a schmuck than that beribboned buffoon Millie. But anyway, whoever the general was, I think there might be a Scott in there or a Miller. I can't remember now. All names are blowing together. But the commander of this operation, it's a NATO operation, but it's under an American commander. So all those armies are nominally under the command of this American, and instead he basically just abandons them. There's never been anything like that. And I think one thing that these other, the European members of NATO have come sadly to the conclusion, I don't know about Justin in Canada, but Canadian said to be rescued by the Ukrainians, and that hasn't even been, I don't know that that's ever been even been mentioned in the Canadian media. Justin is just talking about, he's now talking about applying his COVID policies, which basically means turning Canada into a prison state, to every other thing, starting with climate change and everything else. But the other allies, and particularly this is true, I would say, in Japan and South Korea, are now actively planning for a world in which the Americans do to them what they did at Bagram. So that's, again, something that's changed. Biden says, oh, no, it's completely false to say the allies have said anything against me. And on Twitter, all the lefty, they love him, he gets on well with them. Well, in some sense, they got what they were coming because their priority was to get rid of Trump. Now they've got rid of Trump and they're living in the post-American world. So congratulations, guys, you got what you wanted. Now, with Japan and South Korea and even Taiwan, the question comes, the level to become a nuclear power is very low these days. You can get into the club cheaper than it ever used to be. So what are you going to do if you're South Korea, Japan, Taiwan, or ultimately, even if you're Norway? Are you going to bank on the United States being there for you? This just showed, you know, NATO. We love our allies. NATO is a strong alliance in defense of Western liberties, and we send the president in to have a black tie banquet at NATO headquarters in Brussels, and he's awfully decent about pretending that you chaps like the Slovenes and the Luxembourgers, that even though you're just tiny little countries, which we think of, you know, Luxembourg could fit in the average rec room of an American. But we pretend that you're like solid military allies and take you seriously. And you like being taken seriously. So you give us men to take orders from an American general. And we fly out. You're all flown out to Afghanistan. And then you wake up one morning and the general's flown the coop and the guys driving around in the Humvees are the Taliban. And again, you know, they wanted to get rid of Trump. Instead, they wound up getting rid of America, these guys. Quinn Watson says, Mark, do you think Biden's failures both at home and abroad portend big wins in the 2022 midterm? Just kidding, who cares? If the GOP remains largely silent on issues like corporations, hospitals and schools forcing employees to get jabbed and remains limp-wristed and enervated when it comes to big tech censorship, then the midterms don't matter. None of this other crap freaking matters. If they can't stand up to these glaring incursions on people's basic rights and freedoms, the country is doomed. Well, we're a few days away from the recall of Gavin Newsom. And what's interesting about that is that Larry Elder, you know, polls show him doing spectacularly well. Larry Elder is running as a Republican. And if it, this were, if the left really believed its own bollocks, they'd be doing things like, cool, could Larry Elder be the first black governor of California? But because he's a Republican, instead they're just going along with the mail-in ballot shenanigans that that are already underway. So I wish Larry all the best, but every time I look at a story about what's going on with these ballots in California, I wonder if the Democrats aren't just preparing to steal this thing and steal it as brazenly as, you know, African dictators do. Stealing it brazenly, just as kind of warm-up exercise for 2022. Now, then, if that happens, it'll be one of these things where it doesn't get talked about on the media. You know, the butch boy at Cumulus, whatever that idiot's name is, will be saying, "Oh, you're not allowed to query the election." So you'll be teaching people the lesson that elections don't really matter. Now, then, you have the COVID regime, which is never going away now. They've all said that. The countries that set themselves zero COVID targets, like Australia and New Zealand, have basically abandoned it, and they've said COVID's here to stay now. Now, COVID has a 99% survival rate until you get over 70. So for everybody under 70, you're 70. Basically, it has a 99% survival rate for the entirety of American life expectancy. So people who are at risk of dying from it are people who already have already lived longer than American life expectancy. People who are at a small risk of dying from it. But we have now been shut down for a year and a half, to one degree or another, and the controls are only getting tighter. The restrictions on freedom of movement are only getting tighter. Meanwhile, big tech censorship, where they're basically now, people are walking a very... I don't create any content for Facebook or for Twitter. All we do there is, so we have the headline and then a link to Stein Online. And people say, why do you do that? I don't want to have to make a second click. Why can't you just put it on Twitter? Why can't you put it on Facebook? Why can't? Because for a start, you're a fool if you give content to Facebook and Twitter for free, because you're just enriching people who stole the election from you. Hello, hello, Republican halfwits. They stole the last election from you. They closed down any coverage. Oh, you put Hunter Biden in your tweet and they ban your tweet. They shut down the New York Post. So people seem to think people still play footsie with them. And as we've seen, you know, all the conservative think tanks, Jonah Goldberg, my old friend from National Review, Emerald Robinson, said that National Review had taken money from Google. And he did this thing mocking her. Again, he mocked her as a person. He did that. He played the man, not the ball, as we say in non-American sports. And so he mocked her as a person. He was ad hominem and everything. And then he admits at the end that, in fact, Google did give money to the National Review Institute but it's like walled off from the magazine and its editorial content. Well, I tell you something, because I've just been in a lawsuit with them, and I can tell you that that is complete bollocks on stilts. So we have a thing where essentially this whole argument, they're a private company. Fine, it's not true. They're bigger than nation states. But let's take that as read. And let's not... they stole the last election. They fortified it. Zuckerberg and co, they boasted of how they fortified it. They waited until it was a fait accompli and Trump's awful, useless lawyers had flopped out in every courtroom they went to. And then they gave a big in-depth thing to Time about how they'd fortified the election. You think they live in California, these guys? You think they're not going to be fortifying away at the recall election right now? Yeah. Where I called it the post-American world, but in many ways, whether you're talking about COVID or big tech, we're moving into the post-democratic age too. And again, this is the thing. This is why I'm not really interested in the parochialism of constitution fetishists, because in the big picture, the Chinese are right. This is the end of half a millennium of Euro-American dominance, and the world is being returned to its rightful and superior civilization. These California Silicon Valley companies have created the mechanisms by which the will of the people is rendered irrelevant. So you can have things that are regarded that in fact huge majorities support, such as, for example, the opposition to mass immigration. And yet, if you start to raise these issues on the dominant media platforms of the day, you will be banished. And we have created the tools by which the Davos mindset, the sinister globalist mindset, the guys in the private planes who fly in for the Spectre board meeting and make plans for the rest of us. And to a certain degree, then there's all, we saw this in the European Constitution referenda of whatever it was a decade and a half ago. The globalists make all their perfect plans, and then in the French referendum on the European Constitution, Jacques and Pierre and René scuttle those plans just because they go along and vote. And so we have now created mechanisms by which the entire public discourse can be controlled, and dissenting views that represent, I mean, people talk about VDare, for example. I mentioned VDare, and there's a lot of people who don't like VDare, and it runs John Derbyshire and Ann Coulter and all kinds of people, and I don't know about VDare.com, they're racist, white supremacists, and all the rest of it. Their whole thing is they're opposed to the 1965 US immigration thing, which has radically transformed the demographics of this country. That's a perfectly respectable position to hold. I happen to agree with it. But at the same time, they're constantly harried, constantly silenced, constantly pushed back into dark corners by this ever more totalitarian internet controlled by a handful of woke billionaires. Now, most of those companies, most of those guys, they live and work in California. And this is very interesting. They all support Gavin Newsom. And do you think they want Larry Elder as the governor of California? This is a test for them. It'd be very interesting to see how it works out. Johnny B. says, hi, Mark. Hardly on the same scale as the surrender in Afghanistan, but the chief constable of the PSNI. Do you know what the PSNI stands for? You could win a fully loaded Prius. Oh, too late. The Police Service of Northern Ireland. The chief constable of Northern Ireland has decided to close the police station in Crossmaglen in the bandit country of South Armagh. Ah, happy, happy days. I've spent many happy hours in the bandit country. This means that the criminal fraternity in South Armagh will be able to pursue their businesses of laundering diesel and producing counterfeit cigarettes and who knows what else unhindered. That's actually That's what terrorists do when they stop terrorizing, is they become a kind of conventional mafia. So it would actually be like, if you're worried about ISIS-K, which no one had heard of until 72 hours ago or whatever it was, like if ISIS-K would just start making counterfeit cigarettes, who knows? That would be an improvement there. But anyway, Johnny B continues, the news has been welcomed, unsurprisingly, by Sinn Féin, whose MLA for the area is now the Minister for Regional Development. He's the Minister for Regional Development of Bandit Country. Since he was sentenced to 5 years in prison on explosives charges, we're not entirely sure in which particular direction he would like to develop the region. The Chief Constable has promised to deal with a memorial to murdered policemen in the to-be-demolished police station with sensitivity, equally dispiriting as General Milley's surrender. It's disturbing, Johnny. You know, I for a few minutes, I took Boris Johnson seriously when he used to talk about the awesome foursome, by which he meant England, Scotland, Northern Ireland and Wales. But he's agreed to the Irish backstop is being used for different reasons. It's being used. Sinn Féin are going to win a majority in an election or two south of the border in Ireland one of these days. By one of these days, I mean sooner rather than later. And the only reason Sinn Féin are interested in governing south and north would be to unify them. And the European Union's Irish backstop has greatly assisted that, and the European Union guys would like to do it just to screw over Boris and the gang. So these are not small things. I am an imperialist, and I mourn for that, which, as I said, I think was the greatest era in the peace of the world, 1848 to 1914. It wasn't a terrific time in Ireland because, as you know, that's when the pressure for Irish Home Rule began, and you started getting Irish Parliamentary Party MPs elected to Westminster and all the rest of it. But the diminished, well, again, just to get to the big picture, basically Western civilization is dying on America's watch. And if there's anybody around to write history for this, because it's not clear that there will be, but people are going to be pretty mad about that. Georges Pazin, as I call him, but I think he calls himself George Pazin. And he's awfully tolerant. I think George lives in California, but he's awfully tolerant of me passing him off as some Berlin Quebecer. And he says, "Hi, Mark. I just got back from a short jaunt to 2040 on H.G. Wells's Time Machine, a great early tale for our time, by the way. You can, if you haven't heard my serialization of H.G. Wells's The Time Machine, you know how it goes, Eloy, Morlocks, all the rest of it. You can find that on our Tales for Our Time homepage. I just got back from a short jaunt to 2040 on H.G. Wells's Time Machine, a great early tale for our time, and discovered that John Durham had been thawed from cryogenic freeze long enough to say the Durham Report was being held until after the 2040 election to prevent undue influence." Oh, you had me so excited there for a moment. Yeah, all these people who said Durham's coming, any moment now they're going to be saying, well, he's going to hold off on the Durham Report because he doesn't want it to impact the 2022 midterms. The Durham Report was being held until after the 2040 election to prevent undue influence. Unfortunately, I was arrested by our tech overlords when I attempted to discover the futures of your dominions, dominion nations, Canada and Australia. Canada, Australia calls itself the Commonwealth of Australia. New Zealand is the Dominion of New Zealand. But anyway, the future of Canada and Australia. So I'm relying on your foresight to find out. Do you think Justin will hold on? And do you think Australians will ever truly revolt from their tyrannical leaders' COVID policies? We are seeing some interesting pushback in Australia. No, again, nowhere near where it needs to be. Justin, I think I feel so sad about this. This is why, as I've been saying for over a year now, unless you're prepared to surrender everything, surrender nothing. There are now stories in the newspaper. I saw one this morning about changing the name of the province of British Columbia. Because both of those words are problematic. They're, in fact, the poll is split on which word. Is the British more problematic than the Columbia, or the Columbia more problematic than the British? Everything that works in Canada derives from the fact that you were a British settler nation. And if you don't know that, you're full of crap. Basically, you know nothing about history. Canada wouldn't exist. There would be no Canada. I'd rather what happened in Aden happened, that they ran the Union flag down the flagpole on whatever it was, Tuesday afternoon, and on Wednesday morning they ran the flag up of the Socialist Republic of South Yemen. I'd rather it happened like that than see this hideous nothing like Justin Trudeau, who is only there because he's the beneficiary of having been born into the Canadian establishment. And yet he's passing himself off as Che Guevara or Fidel Castro. Oh, yes, we got to change the name. We got, like, Saigon was changed to Ho Chi Minh City. So British Columbia has got to be changed to Ho Chi Minh Province. I'd rather it was like Aden. For God, I'd rather they just ran down. I just ran down all the flags on all the flagpoles, and they took, and the Queen abdicated and said, "Screw you guys, I'm out of here." Canada only exists because it was a British settler nation that achieved independence in the mother country's image in the 1867 British North American Act. All the rest is details and total crap from people who know nothing about history. So that's what's going to be happening to Her Majesty's doomed dominion, George, since you are. Yeah, you can now be Georges Pezin, say you're a Poulain Quebecer in exile ever since the revolutionaries took over your country and destroyed it. Jeff Estes says, "Hi, Mark. Since the loss of political independence in science, military, medicine and media have come to pass, I suspect the DC goblins have plans to restrict energy and internet. Would like to know your thoughts on these matters." Yeah, I think two things on that. I think, first of all, the car will know where you're going. Yeah, actually, if it doesn't already know, right now I think General Motors or whoever knows where your car is going, but it's going to be the government that will know where you're going. You know, all the dystopian thrillers really are about when technology advances to match the totalitarian imagination. Because if you were a totalitarian, I say this in After America, that if I'm actually quoting Tocqueville, that if you were a big emperor in the 8th century or the 12th century, you might have wanted to control people, but you had no idea what was going on, you know, 100 miles up the road. Absolutely no idea. And you could send a guy to ride into some guy's barnyard once every couple of months. But other than that, he might give you a hard time for not paying the climate change bovine flatulence tax. But other than that, you got on with your life. You got on with your life. So when people talk about George III, I think we had a comment talking about George III as a tyrant. George III was one of the most benign, enlightened men on the planet. He couldn't actually, the American Revolution succeeded because in the end, he was limited in the control of ideas. He had no idea what you were thinking. And what you were thinking had gone way beyond what he wanted you to think. Now, that doesn't happen anymore. As I said, you have much greater levels of technical control for half the people. Obviously, if you're an Afghan, you've got no paperwork, no one knows who you are, and you just process, you know, this ludicrous thing now we have where in Virginia they're calling for Dari and Pashto speakers because they've imported whatever it is now, 250,000 a quarter of a million of our loyal, plucky Afghan translators. And incredibly, it turns out that all the American Army's Afghan translators, none of them speak English, which helps explain why the war went the way it did, doesn't it? So they're now appealing in Virginia for translators to come and act as translators for the translators. Those guys don't have anybody following those movements. But you, they're going to know where your car's going. They're going to know where you're. And so, for example, when you have these restrictions like they have in Ireland or Australia, where you can only go, 3 miles from your home, they're going to be able to check in the government database that your Honda Civic, your Toyota Corolla, hasn't been going 4.8 miles from your home. As to the internet, I think we're already there. I look at Google these days. Just often, if I'm just like trying to look up a piece of mine from 15 years ago or whatever, that was in, I don't know, the National Post. And instead, you have to run the gauntlet to get to that. Even if you're very specific, the first few pages are all like crap about how Mark Stein's a racist and you shouldn't be paying any attention to him. Google basically is not a search machine anymore. It's an obstacle to a search machine. So they're already there with the internet, and the Chinese level of control is now being applied here. And if you notice, all the people who are dominant in our culture actually talk more and more like Chairman Xi. I mean, bad guys don't say, hey, look, I'm the bad guy, I'm evil, and so I don't believe in freedom of speech, and we're going to shut you down. The bad guy talks like a good guy, and that's how Google talks. Oh, yeah, well, we're interested, we're concerned about fortifying the election, and that means we may have to be more alert to policing hate groups. Oh, yeah, who do you mean by hate groups? That's already underway. I've overrun my time here. I'll take one more question. Wanda Sherratt says, dear Mark, since we're in the 12th month of preparing to reopen the economy, could you compare the permanent changes made to our society by the Wu flu siege with what happened to China thanks to their one-child policy? In both cases, the government seems to think they can flip and switch and the train will just smoothly chug down a different track. The reality is proving to be different. Oddly enough, normally it used to be the thing that if you had like a power out, whatever it was in the 70s, the big blackout in New York, and there was like a little baby boom 9 months after that, because if you basically hold up in the dark, there isn't a lot else to do without power. There's been no such baby boom deriving from the 18-month lockdown. In fact, it seems, if anything, to have actually killed procreation. Procreation is always interesting to me because it's a vote for the future. It's one reason why the Iranian demographics died, because Persians were sophisticated people who came under an Islamic totalitarian regime, and it depressed them, so they didn't want to have kids. If you're just in a basket case state, if you're in Helmand province in Afghanistan, your birth rate is through the roof because you think that's great. But in developed societies, it tends to be a vote on the future. Now, China instituted this one-child policy, and I write about it in America Alone, that it's a great structural defect to China because it has millions and millions and millions of surplus young men. So they eventually, 10 years after I wrote the book, they changed the policy. And people haven't responded because people get used to one child being the norm. You can re-engineer people. And again, this gets us back into H.G. Wells territory. You can re-engineer people. And once you've done that, it's very hard to then de-engineer them and get them to go back to the way you were before you re-engineered them. And in China now, they're saying, oh, you can have three kids. Three kids? Has Chairman Xi lost his mind? Generally speaking, if you have surplus young men, you've got to figure out something for them to do. They could take the Russian east shack up with all those wizened babushkas whose husbands fell face down in the vodka at the age of 53, 54, whatever male life expectancy is in Russia right now. They could send them to China to date. And in fact, you already see this. I think it's someone sent me an email about this the other day. I think it was in Egypt where they're starting to date some of the local girls. But again, if you've got surplus young men, the thing to do is you make them colonial administrators in the bits of West Africa that you're buying up, or even the bits of Afghanistan where you're mining everything, and encouraging them to pick out one of the local girls. We are in strange, strange times. And as I say, the conversation isn't anywhere near where it should be in the United States. That day, the fall of Kabul is going to be one, as the Indian experts and I were talking about, to the bafflement of the American expert from the RAND Corporation. The fall of Kabul is one of those hinge moments of history. And I know it's not pleasant. You know, I can tell you, anybody who's grown up in a declining society or in a declining entity, I just told you, I thought the British Empire, 1848 to 1914, they were golden years for the planet. And so somewhere inside me, it's not funny when I hear that they want to change the name of British Columbia. This sense of shame at who we are is appalling and corrosive. But at the same time, a national pride that takes no account of global humiliations, that can't even address them, never mind correct the conditions that led to that humiliation, that is no patriotism. Patriotism is more than saying, nya, 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 I can't hear you. Patriotism means an honest conversation about what the hell is wrong and how we correct it. And I listen to a lot of American radio, and I don't talk radio and watch a lot of TV. And on the right, I don't think the conversation is anywhere near where it ought to be. That'll do it for today. Thank you so much for all your questions. And I would remind you that in a few hours' time, let's see, in a little under 4 hours' time, you'll be able to hear the rerun of my show on 7-8 Radio in the UK. It's a cracker of a show. This week on Sunday, the 7-8 Song of the Week at 5:30 London time, which is 12:30, half past noon in New York, and 9:30 a.m. on the West Coast. So it's a kind of Sunday brunchy show in the Americas, and it's the song that asks the great central question, not only of pop songs, but in some ways of human existence too. So I hope you'll tune in for that. And we've got lots more things to come aside from that and other than that. But I do thank you for having spent your time with us. If you'd like to join the Mark Stein Club, we would love to have you. Go and prowl around the website. We got tons of things on there. We got audio, we got video, we got text. And I do thank all of you who have signed up in recent days, and like Raj, who have returned to the fold like a proud Talib, firing into the air as he drives around in his new American Humvee. Go for it, Raj. Thank you so much for your time, and we will see you again next time.
Mark Stein's Clubland Q&A is a production of Mark Stein Enterprises and Oak Hill Media. All rights reserved.
I don't know where they come from, but they sure do come. I hope they're coming for me. And I don't know how they do it, but they do it good. And they do it for free. They give me cat scratch fever. Cat scratch fever. Cat cat scratch fever. Ow, cat scratch fever. Well, the first time that I got it, I was 10 years old. I got it from the kitty next door. I went to see the doctor, I said, give me the cure. And now I got it some more. They gave me cat scratch fever. Cat scratch fever. Cat scratch fever. Ooh, cat scratch fever. It's nothing dangerous, I feel no pain. I've got to change. You know you got it, you're going insane. It starts a grown man crying, crying, crying. Baby, won't you make my bed? Is purr with the stroke of my hand. They know they're getting it from me, and they know just where to go when they need their loving man. And I do it for free. I give them cat scratch fever. Cat scratch fever. Cat scratch fever. I think I got it some more. I think I got it some more. I know I got it real bad.